there was military reason to think that, look, with what it turned out to be like 30 some odd days of air power, that we're knocking it out first. And then we had deployed whatever it was, like, I think with allies and everything, it was around 100,000 ground troops. And you look at the geography and it was, I mean, it was like a parking lot, the whole country that we would drive up, everything from Saudi Arabia up forward, you know, especially into Kuwait, et cetera, was, I mean, I was in an armory, I was in a tank unit at the time. And it was literally like just driving across a parking lot with this flat, hard sand that was easy to traverse. Everything was easy. And of course, we knew already from intelligence that the Iraqi side was weak. I mean, they had fought it. People said, oh, you know, they fought this 8-year war against Iran. And so they were battle hardened. But when you look at their actual performance, it's like, yeah, they're not really battle hardened, and they couldn't do anything for the last several years. And their maintenance was poor. I mean, we looked at that kind of granular detail. We knew their armor was weak. We knew that it couldn't face head to head with the U.S. We were eager to launch as armored unit because we knew that they couldn't possibly defend or defeat us. None of that stuff would be the case here. Even if we had 300,000 troops to go in now, to go through the mountains there, because my last combat deployment was in Afghanistan, and I spent a lot of time in the eastern part on the Pak border in the mountains that are nearly identical to what virtually the entirety of Western Iran is set up like, with ranges of mountains, not even just one. And that there's no ground army can go through that, because all the events and all the benefits go to the defender. And so they know the ground like we could never know. And just the geography is with, you know, these mountains here, there's high ground and you could have to go through the low ground. You can't traverse it any other way. There's just almost no way you can do this. This is not a militarily solvable problem, is the bottom line.
I want to go back, just picking up on that and something you said at the start, because I've spoken to a lot of contributors and analysts on this show, and I've kind of asked them the question that surely the US must have foreseen the strait being closed. I mean, people have been wargaming this for so long. But what you said at the start, that the US kind of thought this might be a bit more like a Venezuela situation, in and out quickly. I mean, does that point to the fact that they didn't see this coming?
Yeah, I'll tell you, the biggest tell was, and I don't remember the exact date, but somewhere around 2 weeks before we actually launched this. In an interview, President Trump was asked, well, the Iranian side is saying that if we launch this time, that it won't be like the 12-day war, that they'll attack Americans, they'll attack the allies, et cetera, in the region. And you know, they'll go into Israel. One shot equals a full-scale war. And he goes, they said that last time too. They didn't mean it. So no, I'm not worried about that. So, for sure, I can guarantee you for sure he was told that in meetings among many inside of his administration, that they would do everything that they said and that we could count on the strait being closed. But others in his administration were telling him, yeah, but it'll be like Venezuela. As soon as we take out the senior leader, then the rest of them will be compliant and they won't do it because it would cost them too much. That's what they consoled themselves with. That's cutting off your own throat economically, because if you shot that off, then you're not going to get paid either. Well, as we see that they're very clever with the Iranians, and their income has gone up since the war started, not down, because now then they're the only ones that are getting anything through. And some of these others, even if it's not their oil, they get the fee, you know, the toll booth kind of thing set up. So right now that they're just swimming in cash compared to where they were. Now, that's not to say it's good for Iran, because they're also getting pummeled and just people killed and things destroyed left and right. But they hold the cards, and they hold that straight by the neck.
You mentioned the damage it would do to kind of the US reputation if they did walk away. That inner circle that Donald Trump has, do you think there's anyone in it who might be saying, well, hold on, we kind of need an off ramp here?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's no question. There are definitely those in there. The question is, and they've been there from the beginning, the question is, who is he listening to? And that is the real big problem. And, you know, you've seen the likes of General Jack Keane. You've seen Lindsey Graham, certainly Mark Levin, you know, a number of high profile public people. And then there are also those inside his inner circle, not just on the news, that are of that group. And they keep telling him with passion, apparently, and conviction that know that they're just right on the edge. We just got to push a little bit harder. And that's what some of the people are saying. I don't have these by name, but I'm just told that this group exists that are saying, listen, I know this other stuff hadn't worked, but taking Carter Island, because that's where 90% of their oil and all that stuff that's going on with that, that will change the dynamic. We just got to show that we are serious. It's not just bombs. We can go in and take stuff. And the question is going to be, and there's others that are saying, No, sir, that's not going to work. I don't even know if we could get in there. You remember that infamous here, whatever, after the start of this leak of the intel brief that said he was told all these things beforehand in the intelligence community. And I have firsthand knowledge that that's exactly what happened. And that is what they told him. But yet it was not, it didn't work the day. It didn't save the day. So there was others who countered against it. And that's who he listened to.
You posted on X last night saying that this is a war the US can't win or afford. I think we've talked about the winning aspect. How much longer can the US kind of put up with the economic pain?
Well, it's multiple friction points that are getting ready to fall on us. I mean, already even yesterday, some history over the weekend, there was protests and anger going on in friendly Asian countries against us. Apparently, South Korea is having to ration fuel already. It's about to get worse, according to a Bloomberg analysis I saw. The fertilizer's not coming out is already causing a much bigger issue. The natural gas is a big issue. And Bloomberg, I think it was Bloomberg or one of these economic firms put a global map that showed where the problems are going to be because of the unwinding of the ships, et cetera. Every day that this thing stays closed, it's going to be in the month of April is going to be the end of it is going to be catastrophic for nearly everybody. So all of these people are going to be putting pressure on Trump externally. And then, of course, I think I saw that Brent just before we came on here was up around 114. That could well start going north as well. I mean, there's no reason for it to go down until that strait gets opened up. The pressure is going to keep rising. And of course, the price of gasoline here, the price of diesel, which is important as anything else in America, because all of our transport is based on diesel, basically. So the grocery prices, the retail prices of nearly everything is going to have to go up. And then you have the transport ships themselves. It's going to be a problem. So everything is going to start causing problems inside and outside the country on President Trump to get a quick resolution. And if you're looking for a quick off ramp and you don't want to take a personal hit, you know, that leads to desperation. And I want to try to solve this quick when it will ramp up even more and hit them even harder. That's what I worry about that pressure could do. What the only thing that has the legitimate possibility of a quick off ramp is basically acknowledgement that we have strategically already lost this one. And that is, I don't know how President Trump can do that given his personality, but that's what's necessary here to say, look, all right, we're going to make whatever negotiated deal we can get right now and get this thing back open with. And it's not going to be, it'll never go back to the way it was before because Iran now has control and they're never going to give that up willingly, but they will open it up with conditions. And I think that we could meet those, but it'll come at a high price politically, which is, you know, even more important and reputationally for Trump. But if he doesn't do that and he tries to just say, no, I'm going to make it work with military, it can get much worse.
Yeah, from where I'm sitting, I think it's probably tricky to see that. Do you think that is at all possible from President Trump?
That he would submit and do something like that? Not right now, no. I mean, I don't see any chance because, I mean, he's had every opportunity. Believe me, looking at what happened on the night of the 26th of February and the day of the 27th, I think it was Wednesday and Thursday, when you had the Omani foreign minister go on CBS News here and admit and tell the world what happened the night before with Steve Witkoff, with Abbas Araghchi, that the Iranian side had agreed to zero enrichment, that they would prove that they didn't have a bomb, that there would be intrusive inspections and maybe even American inspections, and that the support for the proxies and the missile program would both be on the table. We'd talk about them later. Before that, they weren't even on the table. They said they would only talk about nuclear. Now then, they gave him just the golden bowl of amazingness from Trump's perspective, something that would be better than the Obama deal. The Iranians were willing to go along publicly and say so, that this is better than Obama had. Everything in the world you could have to have a great diplomatic victory, which would have been huge domestically for Trump. Instead, he was talked out of that and went in. So if he would give away a golden success, then it's hard for me to imagine how he now chooses a month or so later, you know, an ugly exit. That's what's necessary, but he didn't do what was a beneficial then either. So I have no confidence he'll do it right now.
What do you make of reports? There's some whispers around today that kind of long mooted plan to see some of the enriched uranium inside Iran. There's some reports today that they are seriously actually considering that as an option. What do you make of that?
Yes, yes, I have that from other sources I have here in DC as well, who are in a position to know. And I just have to just, even with everything that we've seen, even with everything in President Trump's history, I'm thinking that can't be real. Surely everybody who wears a uniform, if there's a second lieutenant anywhere in the range of Washington, D.C., they would tell him that the military prospect of doing something like that is nearly impossible. Number one, Iran is not stupid. And in my view, there is no chance that they have all of it in one spot because you have a single point of failure there. I'm sure it's spread in multiple places, probably very deeply buried underground, multiple levels of defense, many people defending it. So wherever you would go, you could expend enormous amounts of time, and then you would only get some of it if you succeeded. But the same way that you would not succeed if by taking some of these islands because all the firepower would be drawn on that, the even worse on the ground, because now then you're nearly defenseless in a certain sense on the ground because you're needed for an operation that would definitely take some number of days in the very best case scenario. And you have to continue to have aerial resupply. You can't take everything you need on the ground. You can't bring that much stuff with you. And it would just be pulverized from the air because they would focus all of their assets on that one thing there. And you would probably lose the whole ground force. You just can't pull off something like that on the fly when everybody on God's earth knows it's coming. And it's defended in the most hardened shelters that you can imagine in their country.
Yeah, I also don't mean to be flippant when I say this, but for an operation like that, it's probably not the best start when the fact that it's being considered as being briefed on the front page of the Wall Street Journal.
Well, yeah, I got to think we got to add that into the calculation, too. It's like, okay, everything has been talked about, Bandar Abbas, Karg Island, Qasem, and then this coming here and, openly being talked about it in Wall Street Journal. Yeah, I mean, it's as bad as it could be.